Good morning.
Good morning. I don't think he's on yet.
He's not?
I don't think he's on yet.
Okay. So let's wait for a few minutes more. Then, if not, I will call him.
Okay. He's supposed to be, I think, in Sacramento today.
Oh, is he going to start a new job?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Is he going to start a new class?
This is the Sefer Yetzirah class.
Oh. I'm going to call him.
Yes, I think so, because some people, I think, have to go to work. That's a good idea.
Yes, let me call him.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Please join me in saying the Ana B'Koach.
Ana B'Koach.
Gedulat Shimcha.
Yachid Geah, Lamcha Penei,
For the course, please study continuously. Is that the link?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, well, it comes up. The web page cannot be found.
Yeah, I'll fix the link. I checked that before. I don't know why that happened, but I will fix the link this morning.
I really wish you wouldn't give me, I wish you wouldn't give me credit or recognize me.
Well, I appreciate the work.
Well, I know you do, but I told you I like staying in the background. It's only a continuation of yours, so cut and paste, that's all I did.
Well, it's appreciated.
I know.
If you continue down to the, you'll see a link that says the Sefer Yetzirah Class 2 handout.
Okay.
And click on that. And I will also, above that, you'll see where the recording from last week's class is also available if you want to listen to it again. So when you open the handout for class 2, it goes directly to the origin of the Sefer Yetzirah. It scrolls down a little bit we did last week. So now we're ready to start going into some of the history. And as we did last week, I'll keep my eye on the clock to make sure we don't go over the 6 o'clock. A cryptic story in the Babylonian Talmud states that on the eve of every Shabbat, Yehuda Hanasi's pupils, Rabbi Hanina and Rabbi Hoshaya, who devoted themselves especially to cosmogony, used to create a delicious calf by means of the Sefer Yetzirah and ate it on the Sabbath. What do you think that story is saying?
That he used the techniques from Sefer Yetzirah and created a golem.
That is correct. It's not that it wasn't a golem of a man.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It was a golem of a calf. And they didn't have to pay for meat. And meat was very expensive in those days. And every week they would do this. They used the techniques of mind over matter. Now, most people, when they read this story or read about this story, they don't believe it because they don't think it's possible. And that's one of the things that we have to work on, to recognize that this is not a story made up fable. This is a very real truth. Mystics assert that the biblical patriarch Abraham used miraculous creations in the War of the Five Kings versus the Four Kings in the book of Genesis. In that story, Abraham rescued his nephew Lot with 318 men. The Midrash says that it actually was one man, his servant Eliezer, whose gematria of his name is 318. And the Midrash says he used the letters of the Aleph-Bet to overcome his opponents. He used the tools of the Sefer Yetzirah to create the miracles attributed by the rabbis of the Talmudic era as ascribed by the rabbinic commentators to the use of the Sefer Yetzirah. Again, is the Midrash just making up a story, or is it teaching us that the tools of the Sefer Yetzirah are powerful enough to create mind over matter, to create things out of thin air, or to create miracles within our own lives? The Sefer Yetzirah's appendix declares that Abraham was the recipient of the divine revelation of mystic lore. It is revealed by all practicing Kabbalists until the 20th century that Abraham was the author of the Sefer Yetzirah. Among them are the rabbis of the classical rabbinic era, Sida HaGaon, in the responsum cited in Kerem Chemet, which is a book written by HaGaon, which is, Gaon means genius. The living genius is how the name HaGaon would be translating. And the philosopher Kabbalists such as Sadia Gaon and Shabtai Donlo and Yehuda Halevi, who is the author of the Khazari, never doubted that Abraham was the author of the book. In Pardes Rimonim, Moses ben Jacob Cordovero, the Ramak, mentions a minority opinion that Rabbi Akiva offered it, and takes it to mean Abraham wrote it and Akiva redacted it to its current form. Jewish Midrash attributes the teaching to the book of Raziel given to Adam, and that from Adam it passed over to Hanoch ben Yared, and then to Noah, who gave it to his eldest son Shem, who is called Malkitzedek in the Torah, who transferred it to Abraham, the friend of God, along with the high priesthood for the world. My commentary. The worldly high priesthood is an important concept in Kabbalah and is not shared with most teachers to their students. The teaching is concealed in the idea of Aaron becoming the high priest instead of Moshe. There is a priesthood for the world. The high priest in Jerusalem who did the service in the temple is the high priest of the world. And that came directly from Abraham, through Isaac, through Jacob, through Moses, who was supposed to be the high priest, but was not allowed to, and it became Aaron instead. And Abraham got the priesthood directly from his great forefather, Shem, the son of Noah, who received the priesthood when he came out of the ark. According to modern historians, the origin of the text is unknown and hotly debated. Some scholars believe it might have been an early medieval origin, while others emphasize earlier traditions appearing in the book. The division of the letters into the three classes of vowels, mutes, and consonants also appears in Hellenic texts. Hellenic texts are Greek texts with Jewish influences. My commentary, the Hellenic texts refer to Jewish writings that have Greek influence. It is rumored, and my intuition says it is true, that every Greek philosopher studied with one of the Jewish sages, which is where Western civilization gets its wisdom. This includes Plato, Aristotle, and Pythagoras. To delve into that just slightly, there is a tradition in Judaism that wisdom that is from the other nations originally comes from the Torah. But when it was given to the other nations and they started to utilize it, it became corrupted. And that wisdom needs to be returned to the Torah. And there is a technique that is cleansing of all of the corrupted influences. And that technique is taught by the Baal Shem Tov and has come down to us today through that manner. The historical origin of the Sefer Yetzirah was placed by Redzinstein, Poimandres, page 291, in the second century of the Common Era, before the Common Era. According to Christopher Benton, the Hebrew grammatical form places its origin closer to the period of the Mishnah, around the second century of the Common Era. In a manuscript in the British Museum, the Sefer Yetzirah is called Hilkot Yetzirah, and could declared to be esoteric lore, not accessible to anyone but the really pious, where it is mentioned as being used by Nachmanides, the Ramban, for Kabbalistic purposes. My commentary. The Talmud also has a cryptic one-line statement that the Sefer Yetzirah was originally written by Abraham, who was the world's first or the world's foremost astrologer of his generation. It was originally written as a book of outreach to his generation so that they would learn how to know the Creator. It consisted of 400 chapters. Our current versions, there are multiple manuscripts as discussed below, have only 6 chapters. Does this mean we have lost this information? Not necessarily. It may very well be revealed in certain teachings of the Talmud and other writings, especially the writings of the Kabbalist Abu Lafia. Rabbi Abu Lafia was excommunicated by the rabbis of the 13th century, and his writings were outlawed and banned. They have only been recently translated in the last 30 years. We will be teaching some of these techniques as they are unique meditative techniques. I think it is good to have a quick study of Rabbi Abu Lafia, as the story is amazing and does impact your thinking if you allow it to. Rabbi Abu Lafia was a Kabbalist who decided to go see the Pope so that world peace could happen and the Mashiach would manifest. He traveled a number of hundred or thousand miles, and he arrived at the gates of Rome and the gates of the Vatican, where he demanded to see the Pope because he had a message from God for the Pope. He was arrested and then spent approximately 3 months in jail. When the Pope died and he was released, this happened on the day he was to be hung by order of that particular Pope. Do you think this is a coincidence? What do you think the message... Go ahead, Barbara.
No, I thought you were asking the question. I see you're reading it. My answer is no. I don't think it's a coincidence.
It's not a coincidence, but people need to understand that it's not a coincidence. People need to realize that these stories that come down to us from history, that these stories of centaurs, these stories of mermaids, these are all true things, true stories that deal with different dimensions. They deal with different aspects. There is a thing, a creation called a unicorn. In Hebrew, it's the word tachash. We don't know the translation of the word tachash, but some of the Kabbalists have said it's a unicorn. It's a horse-like being with one horn on its forehead. Why do animals have two antlers? Because those animals have two different energies within them. Why would an animal have one horn? Because that animal is manifesting the unity of all energies within itself. People can see who we are if they know how to read faces and palms. These are sciences. They're real knowledge, real wisdom that is available to us, that have come down through the centuries What do you think the message for the Pope was? Contemplate these questions during your meditations. As you learn the different meditative techniques taught in the Sefer Yetzirah, contemplate what are these meanings. Current Jewish academic writers indicate that Rabbi Akiva is the author of the Sefer Yetzirah. The Kabbalists teach that the author is Abraham. And I follow what the Ramak described without full revelation. Rabbi Akiva received an ibur of Abraham to redact the manuscript. The section called Manuscripts. The Sefer Yetzirah exists in multiple versions, including the short version, the long version, the Sadia Gaon version, and the Gra version, among others. The differences among these versions tend to be minor. This is what Wikipedia said, my commentary. Actually, these differences are major. We will be using the version of the Gra, which is the same version as the Ramak. It has certain verses in chapter 1 and elsewhere that do not appear in the other versions. The most famous English translation is by Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, and many people get this copy to follow along with my classes. I do identify most of where the differences lie. It is up to you if you want to get this book, yet I strongly suggest that you do work and practice what it is taught. Reading the Kaplan version does help, but not if you think that it is the work itself. The short version comprises about 1,300 words, while the long version about 2,600 words. In the 13th century, Abraham Abulafia noted the existence of both of them. In the 10th century, Sadia Gaon wrote his commentary based on a manuscript which was a reorganized copy of the longer version, now called the Sadia version. In the 16th century, the Ari redacted the text, the short version, to harmonize it with the Zohar. And then in the 18th century, the Gra, Eliyahu the Gaon of Vilna, the genius of Vilna, further redacted this, now called the Gra version. My commentary. The Gra teaches a form of Kabbalah which is different and unique from the version followed by most people today. It relates to the concept of Mashiach ben Yosef, or ben Ephraim. It strives to put Mashiach into consciousness rather than into a person. The influence section. The Sefer Yetzirah is devoted to speculations concerning God's creation of the world. The ascription of its authors to the biblical patriarch Abraham shows the high esteem which it enjoyed for centuries. It may even be said that this work had a greater influence on the development of the Jewish mind than almost any other book after the completion of this Talmud. The Sefer Yetzirah is exceedingly difficult to understand on account of its obscure style. The difficulty is rendered still greater by the lack of a critical edition, the present text being much interpolated and altered. Hence, there is a wide divergence of opinion regarding the age, the origin, the contents, and the value of the book, since it is variously regarded as the Temple era. The Talmud area, and the Middle Ages. my commentary. The Sefer Yetzirah is extremely valuable for the study of Kabbalah. It teaches us the essence of the letters. It teaches us various meditative techniques. It teaches the spiritual world structure of the Sefirot. It deals with gematria and letter substitutions. It also shows many correspondences between the various frames of reference. And these correspondences are very significant. The structure of the Sefer Yetzirah. The Sefer Yetzirah describes how the universe was created by the God of Israel. A list of all of God's Hebrew names appears in the first sentence of the book, through the 32 wondrous ways of wisdom. I didn't make a commentary, but what appears in the Sefer Yetzirah is a list of God's names, but they're not. It's not a complete list. The Sefer Yetzirah has 10 numbers. Sefirot, the origin of the word Sefirot, means numbers. The 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet, the three mother letters, the Aleph, Mem, and Shin, the seven doubles, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Kuf, or Kaf, Pei, Resh, and Tav, the 12 simples or elementals, the He, the Wa, the Zion, the Chet, the Tet, the Yud, the Lamed, the Nun, the Samech, the Ayin, the Tzadi, and the Kuf. These divisions correspond to Jewish concepts, such as the three letters making up God's name, Yud, He, and Vav, the 7 days of the Jewish week, the 12 tribes of Israel, and the 12 months of the Hebrew calendar, as well as to early scientific or philosophical ideas, such as the four elements, fire, water, air, and earth, the seven planets, the 10 directions, the 12 zodiacal constellations, various human physical functions, and a list of the parts of the human body. The book describes how God used the 10 Sefirot and the 22 Hebrew letters in various combinations. And finally, as described in the closing section of the book, how he revealed the secret to Abraham as a covenant with him. God's covenant with Abraham is described as being twofold. Between the 10 toes of the feet is the covenant of the circumcision, the milah in Hebrew, which also means word. Between the 10 fingers of the hands, also identified with the 10 sefirot, is the covenant of the tongue, lashon in Hebrew, which also means language. The last sentence describes how God connects the 22 letters of the Torah to Abraham's tongue and reveals its secrets to Abraham. The philosophical is discussed first, since it is necessary for an elucidation of the philosophical speculations of the work. The 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet are classified both with regard to the position of the vocal organs in producing the sounds and with regard to consonant intensity. In contrast to the Jewish grammarians who assumed a special mode of articulation for each of the five groups of sounds, the Sefer Yetzirah says that no sound can be produced without the tongue, to which the other organs of speech merely lend assistance. Hence, the formation of the letters is described as follows. With the tip of the tongue and the throat, between the lips and the tip of the tongue, in the middle of the tongue, by the tip of the tongue, by the tongue which lies flat and stretched, and by the teeth. The letters are distinguished, moreover, by the intensity of the sound necessary to produce them, and are accordingly divided into mutes, which are unaccompanied by sound, such as the mem, the sibilant, such as the shin, which is therefore called the hissing shin, the aspirate, such as the aleph, which holds a position between the mutes and the sibilants, and is designated as the airy aleph, which holds the balance in the middle. Besides these three letters, which are called mothers, a distinction is also drawn between the seven double letters and the 12 simple letters, the remaining characters of the alphabet. My commentary. The above section is not completely correct, so please disregard it. The reason I left it on the page will become evident as we go through the letters and their correspondences in about 5 months. One can learn from every source, and one must learn how to limit the influence of corrupted material on their consciousness. This is also one reason that I have left it in. We're going to be taking longer than the 5 months for the simple reason that the last time I did this, I didn't limit it just to an hour each class, which I think is necessary because of the time of this class being early morning. People have to get to work. In the earlier classes, the classes would run up to an hour and a half and sometimes even a little bit longer. So what was 40 classes initially is going to be something like 60 this time. The section called Teachings of the Sefer Yetzirah. Both the macrocosm, the universe, and the microcosm, man, are viewed in this system as products of the combination and permutation of these mystic characters, and such a use of the letters by the Jews for the formation of the holy name, fourth, surgical purposes, is attested by the magic papyri that, quote, an angelic book of Moses, which was full of allusions to biblical names. The linguistic theories of the author of the Sefer Yetzirah are an integral component of his philosophy. Its other parts being astrological and Gnostic cosmogony. The three letters Aleph, Mem, and Shin are not only the three mothers from which the other letters of the alphabet are formed, but they are also symbolical figures for the three primordial elements, the substances which underlie all existence. According to the Sefer Yetzirah, the first emanation from the Spirit of God was the Ruach, the Spirit, the air, the wind, that produced water, which in its turn formed the genesis of fire. In the beginning, however, these three substances had only a potential existence, and came into actual being only by means of the three letters, Aleph, Mem, and Shin. And as these are the principal parts of speech, so those three substances are the elements from which the cosmos has been formed. The cosmos consists of three parts: the world, the year, which is time, and man, which are combined in such a way that the three primordial elements are contained in each of the three categories. The water formed the earth. Heaven was produced from the fire. And the Ruach produced the air between heaven and earth. The three seasons of the year, the winter, the summer, and the rainy season, correspond to water, fire, and Ruach. In the same way as man consists of a head, corresponding to fire, torso, represented by Ruach, and the other parts of the body, equivalent to water. The seven double letters produce the seven planets, the 7 days, and the seven apertures in man, the two eyes, the two ears, the two nostrils, and one mouth. Again, as the seven double letters vary, each pronounced either hard or soft, so the seven planets are in continuous movement, approaching or receding from the earth. The 7 days, in like manner, were created by the seven double letters, because they change in time according to their relation to the planets. The seven apertures in man connect him with the outer world as the seven planets join heaven and earth. Hence, these organs are subject to the influence of the planets, the right eye being under Saturn, the left eye under Jupiter, and the like. The 12 simple letters created the 12 signs of the zodiac, whose relation to the earth is always simple or stable, and to them belong the 12 months in time and the 12 leaders in man. The latter are those organs which perform functions in the body independent of the outside world, being the hands, the feet, the kidneys, the gall, intestines, stomach, liver, pancreas, and spleen. And they are accordingly subject to the 12 signs of the zodiac. In its relation to the construction of the cosmos, matter consists of the three primordial elements, which, however, are not chemically connected with one another, but modify one another only physically. Power emanates from the seven and the 12 heavenly bodies, or in other words, from the planets and the signs of the zodiac. The dragon rules over the world, matter and heavenly bodies. The spear rules time, and the heart rules over the human body. The author sums up the explanation in a single sentence. The dragon is likened to a king on his throne, the spear like a king traveling in his country, and the heart like a king at war. The section titled Creation. To harmonize the biblical statement of the creation, ex nihilo, with the doctrine of the primordial elements, the Sefer Yetzirah assumes a double creation, one ideal and the other real. Their name is possibly derived from the fact that as numbers express only the relations of two objects to each other, so the ten Sefirot are only abstractions and not realities. again, as the numbers from 2 to 10 are derived from the number 1, so the 10 Sephirot are derived from the 1, the Spirit of God. The Spirit of God, however, is not only the commencement, but also the conclusion of the Sephirot. Their end is fixed in their beginning, as the flame is bound to the coal. Hence, the Sephirot must not be conceived as emanations in the ordinary sense of the word, but rather as modifications for the Spirit of God, which first changes to air, then becomes water, and finally fire, the last being no further removed from God than the first. Besides these abstract ten sephirot, which are conceived only ideally, the 22 letters of the alphabet produce the material world, for they are real and are the formative powers of all existence and development. By means of these elements, the actual creation of the world took place, and the ten sephirot, which before this had only an ideal existence, became realities. This is then a modified form of the Talmudic doctrine that God created heaven and earth by means of letters. The explanation on this point is obscure, since the relation of the 22 letters to the 10 sephirot is not clearly defined. My commentary. This means that there are differing opinions as to which letters go with which connecting lines. The first sentence of the book reads, 32 paths, marvels of wisdom hath God engraved. These paths being then explained as the 10 sephirot and the 22 letters, while the sephirot are expressly designated as abstract. It is said of the letters, 22 letters, God drew them, hewed them, combined them, weighed them, and interchanged them, and through them produced the whole creation and everything that is destined to come into being. The letters are neither independent substances nor yet as mere forms. They seem to be the connecting link between essence and form. They are designated as the instruments by which the real world, which consists of essence and form, was produced from the sephirot, which are merely formless essences. My commentary, formless is also a form. Theories of a contrast in nature. In addition to the doctrine of the sephirot and the letters, the theory of contrasts in nature, or of the syzygies, the pairs as they are called by the Gnostics, occupies a prominent place in the Sefer Yetzirah. This doctrine is based on the assumption that the physical as well as the moral world consists of a series of contrasts, mutually at war, yet pacified and equalized by the unity of God. Thus, in the three prototypes of creation, the contrasting elements, fire and water, are equalized by air. Corresponding to this are the three mothers among the letters. The mute, Mem, contrasting the hissing shin, and both being equalized by the Aleph. Seven pairs of contrasts are enumerated in the life of man. Life and death, peace and strife, wisdom and folly, wealth and poverty, beauty and ugliness, fertility and sterility, lordship and servitude. How to, this is my commentary, how to go from these seven to the 28 times mentioned in Kohelet or Proverbs by King Solomon. There's a relation between the number 28 and the number 7. From these premises, the Sefer Yetzirah draws the important conclusion that good and evil have no real existence. For since everything in nature can exist only by means of its contrast, a thing may be called good or evil according to its influence over man by the natural course of the contrast. The book teaches that man is a free moral agent, and therefore a person is rewarded or punished for his or her actions. While the idea of heaven and hell are left unmentioned in the book, it teaches that the virtuous man is rewarded by a favorable attitude of nature, while the wicked man finds it hostile to him. My commentary. Remember, Kabbalah teaches that there is no reward and punishment. There is only cause and effect. The Gnostic elements. The Sefer Yetzirah is similar to various Gnostic systems. As the Sefer Yetzirah divides the Hebrew alphabet into three groups, so the Gnostic masters divided the Greek letters into three classes, regarded by him as the symbolic emanations of the three powers, which include the whole number of the upper elements. Both systems attach great importance to the power of the combinations and permutations of the letters in explaining the genesis and development of multiplicity from unity. The Clementine writings present another form of Gnosis which agrees in many points with the Sefer Yetzirah. As in the latter, God is not only the beginning but also the end of all things. So in the former, he is the beginning, Reshit, and final perfection, Tachlit, of all that exists. And the Clementine writings furthermore teach that the Spirit of God is transformed into another spirit, a ruach. And this into water, which becomes fire and rocks, thus agreeing with the Sefer Yetzirah, where the Spirit of God, air, water, and fire are the first four sefirot. The remaining six sefirot are the limitations of space by the three dimensions in a twofold direction, are also found in the Clementina, where God is described as the boundary of the universe and as the source of the six infinite dimensions. The dragon, the Tali, perhaps meaning curled one, as a coiled serpent. I say that's not correct. Which plays such an important part in the astrology of the book, is probably an ancient Semitic figure. At all events, its name is not Arabic, as scholars have hitherto assumed, but either Aramaic or possibly a Babylonian loanword. The dragon is often understood as the starry constellation Draco, and by extension it represents the cosmic axis, equivalent to the north-south pole. Because this constellation coils around the north star, and thus around the celestial axis, as it intersects the northernmost part of the celestial sphere. We have reached more sections to read in this handout. And I recommend that you take the time to read it during this week and to contemplate what has been taught here. Most of what's written here is from Wikipedia, as said in the beginning. There is a lot of explanations, a lot of secrets being revealed in these words. A lot of these won't become clear to you until later on in the course. You probably will need to keep referring back to this, and you may have questions either now or later in the course from this one handout. Feel free to ask them at any time. Are there any questions?
I would like to ask you something that I had experience with when I was teaching in elementary school. Naturally, first, second, and third grade, the alphabet was a very important thing, and we would sing it. And the way I really knew, especially in first grade, when they had mastered it, was by being able to go backwards and say the letters backwards. And when I was teaching the beginner's Hebrew class to adults, again, you know, the same techniques I used with teaching English to children, I used in my class. And the week that I had decided that, oh, they really knew the alphabet, and I thought I could go backwards. And during that week, I read something from one of my source books. I don't remember which one, and I haven't gone to try to investigate which ones. And it said not to do that. And I've wondered about that in the practice of the alphabet sheet. If I remember from memory, it was because I don't know, had something to do with Tav and Shin, with Shin being fire. And that occurred to me while during the week. Do you want to tell me anything?
I'll give you a metaphorical answer to your question. We live in a society that venerates science. And medical science is probably the epitome, the highest level of our science. Because healing is a very important aspect to people. They like to be healthy. They like to be healed if they're not healthy. Science is never dealing with the why, it's dealing with the how. So the question is, science says that we need 8 hours of sleep a night. Science says that historically, we actually needed 12 hours of sleep because we didn't have lights to be able to do anything at night. So whenever the sun went down, we went to sleep. And we stayed asleep until the sun came up. This is what is believed in science today. But because of our society and our tensions and our process, we only need 8 hours of sleep to be healthy. But in truth, the Torah teaches us that King David never slept more than a half hour. Actually, the language is he never slept more than the sleep of a horse, which is 60 breaths, which is a half hour long. Now, what does all of this have to do with your question? Your question question is, why would we say to teach the alphabet backwards? When the science is telling us not to do that, why is science afraid to teach letters backwards? I never learned to speak English alphabet backwards. It wasn't taught. Maybe it should have been taught. Maybe I'd have better language skills in English if I was taught, but it was never taught. But I have learned to speak the alphabet backwards, not as well as I do it forwards, and that's a limitation that I still have. Why is that? Why do we teach you to go to say it backwards? As you said, you knew the children knew the letters when they could say it backwards. They were familiar with it when it comes backwards. There's a flexibility in learning something backwards. Science is measuring something that the Sefer Yetzirah, the letters, the teachings of Kabbalah go beyond. The spiritual worlds are upside down, as taught in the Talmud and in various stories, upside down relative to our world. If we don't learn to go backwards, we'll never be able to make the transition into the spiritual realms, because we have to be able to perceive things backwards relative to our existence in this world. That's the commentary I have for you.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions?
One more.
Sure.
You say you don't agree with the telly being the coiled serpent.
That's not what
I
said.
Is that the same? Well, it says Hanok says not correct. I'm just wondering if that spelling of Tali is the same as the Watcher Angels. I guess that's really my question.
Well, the Watcher Angels come from the Book of Daniel, and the word is Watchers. It is not spelled the way the Tali is spelled in the Sefer Yetzirah. It's a totally different word.
Okay.
But they're the same thing, according to my teachers. The Tali is interpreted by most of the academics in studying the Yetzirah, the Sefer Yetzirah. The Tali is thought of as the star field, what we call the Milky Way. The Zohar says the Milky Way is the home of the negative system. The Watchers and the Tali are the same thing, and they are not the Milky Way. They are not the coiled serpent. They are a race of angels who have been given a responsibility to maintain the plan of man. There was a movie about 1 or 2 years ago that I never saw. I don't know the title of the movie. But the advertisements implied that these two people wanted to get married, and there was a group of entities who prevented them from getting married. They kept making sure that they couldn't meet. They always put blockages in the two people coming together. But the two people wanted to get married. They wanted to come together. And that the story was how these entities would manipulate physicality in order to prevent the people from coming together, and how the people would overcome that. That's my understanding of the movie based on the advertisements that I saw. And that's essentially what the Watchers do. They watch over man to make sure that he follows the plan of creation. Just like a parent watches over a child in the sandbox to make sure it's safe. How much damage can a child do in the sandbox? Quite a bit, as most mothers know, most parents realize. You watch over your child until your child is old enough to watch over you. The Tali, as we will find when we discuss Chapter 6, the Tali are the Watchers. They are a race of angels who have a job that comes to them from Hashem. Are there any other questions, or did I not answer your question completely?
No, you did. One of my friends who has listened to some of the classes called me about a week ago to ask me if I had seen a documentary on television that said that they actually had found mermaids in the water. So, and I said, no, I had not, but I thought that was interesting. She thought it was, she had heard one of the classes where you had mentioned the mermaids, and then she saw that on television. So, and it was one on the History Channel, I think.
Yeah, well, that's where those kind of shows are played.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen that particular documentary either. And, the Zohar is replete with lots of discussions, and one of them is to indicates that there are actually people living under the sea in cities. Something that we don't recognize, we're not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not surprised.
Okay, thank you. That's very good.
You're very welcome. Any other questions? Have a beautiful day, a beautiful week, and a beautiful month. We'll be here next Monday at the same time.
Okay.
Today's classes are extensive. At 3 o'clock, I hope to be doing a Zohar class. At 5:30 is the first of our Sacramental Basic classes. At 8:30, we'll be doing the second class of our Four Phases series. Tuesday at 8:30, we'll be doing the, I believe it's the 15th class of our Advanced Reincarnation series. Thursday at 10 p.m. will be a Zohar class. Saturday at 10 p.m. a Zohar class. And next Sunday at 10:30 a.m., I believe we're continuing our class on the prayer, on the 18 morning blessings. Have a beautiful day.
Okay, you too. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.